这是之一。Joint venture with Toshiba in Japan, what they call Toshiba. And they make silicones now, and great success of it over there. They had celebrated their 20th anniversary and invited me over, along with Charlie Reed, who was the MIT assistant professor they brought in. He's a chemical engineer. He has a process, laboratory process, Rockefeller has invented. Can you make an industrial process out of it? Can you divide the equipment? See, when I talk so much, I swallow air. He gathered together a group of chemical engineers, and they actually worked this out. Charlie Reed brought with him the MIT development, the fluid bed, the catalysts fluidized for petroleum refining. Lewis was the man in MIT. Reed said, gee, this is made to order. If we could run heated methyl chloride vapor of fluidized copper and silicon powder, mixed powders, we could make this by the ton. We could make it by the thousands of tons. That's the way it's made today. Yeah, Toshiba invited Charlie Reed and he over there. If you go over there now to their plant outside Kyoto, you'll find they have they planted trees, one in honor of me and one in honor of Charlie Reed, has our names on them standing there in a Japanese manner. A wonderful race, the way they do things. How comes all of the laboratory personnel and most of the plant personnel all dressed up, arranged a number of benches with an awning, a marquee overhead, and there the two holes on the ground to plant the trees, and the president of the company delivered a little speech. And then he had his assistant bring him a shovel. Not an ordinary shovel, mind you. A brand new spade, they called it a shovel, a brand new spade, shiny, with a white ribbon attached to it, and handed it to the president, who took up a little spoonful of dirt from the pile provided him for him, and put it in the hole with the Rockau tree in there. And then he takes another spade, another ribbon-tied one, took up a little dirt, put it in the one for Charlie Reed, and a great deal of bowing, congratulations with the handshakes. Then he called upon me. I must go up, make my bows, take the B ribbon spade, a new one of course, not one that had touched dirt before, put in the tree. Well, I actually put my foot on the spade and brought up a shovel full of dirt and put it in, and they all applauded wildly, and then Charlie Reed did the same for his, and then there were more speeches and some music, and so the trees are there. They recorded everything that we did on videotape. They sent me a copy of the tape, which I could play for you or loan to you if you want it.
I'd like to borrow it if I could.
Sure.
Return it to you.
And they also held, since they had sent a limousine for me, caught me, we were up in Maine at the time, carted me to Boston Airport, carried in my bag, stayed overnight in the Boston Airport, the driver with us to come take our bags in the morning and take them to the check-in counter, put us on first-class lounge, first-class plane all the way, the very best hotel in Tokyo, and the very best of everything. This went on for an entire week and two weekends, in a very big way. Now, as part of that, they wanted Charlie Reed and me to hold what they called a symposium, where they would sit down and they wanted to ask questions, and we would give them all the replies. Here's blackboard, everything, the microphone on us. They recorded all the sound, and they did videotape of us too. So I told them the whole story of how the methyl silicone that they were making came about, starting with the Grignard preparations and going on through the discovery of a direct synthesis and the trials of going through that, and how Dow Corning got it free for nothing, and I didn't hold back on any of that, and they sat there bug-eyed and they got it all down. But Charlie Reed then, instead of scolding me mildly for bringing out all this history of General Electric Company, backed me up in it. He said, look, I would never have become vice president of General Electric Company if it hadn't been for the direct synthesis, and the present vice president who's in there would never be in either, because I brought him through as assistant and all the way up through the ranks, and I put him there. So he owes a debt to Rock Out too, and so it went on and on. And so that's all in their proceedings. I don't know whether you could get a copy of that, but anyway, I've told you the whole story. We must surely be at the end, and near the end of what. What else you want to ask me?
Well, I appreciate your giving me all of this information. It's very, very helpful. This was 40... I'm trying to get the date straight.
First experiment was on May 10th, 1940.
40.
Patent application was submitted.
Well, patents were in 41 sometime, weren't they? There's a list here. The first five were October 7th, 1941.
That was when he asked, but the patent could not issue. They put it under secrecy orders, thinking it might be...
Oh, during the war?
During the war.
Okay.
So it could not come out until 1945. And then, of course, the cat was out of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the metallurgical company in Niagara Falls, Electromet, and Union Carbide, wanted to get in on the act then, so they were given a license with a royalty attached, and they back to 1946. The mechanism of methyl chloride and silicon copper, I heard and knocked out. Here, direct synthesis of organosilicon compounds. contribution from the Search Lab, General Electric Company. And
was that, where was that published?
JACS.
JACS, okay. What year? I just want to make a note of that.
Volume 67.
Mm-hmm.
Issue of June 1945. Page 963.
Okay.
That's the original article. I was looking for the date it was submitted.
It's usually right under the title, or under the abstract, or somewhere, or above the title.
Usually.
Or is it at the end? And those early ones, I don't remember now.
Oh, received January 29, 1945. Well, that was after the patent application. This is the article. I want is the patent. Dumkopf, the patent. Experiments in between May of 10th and 1940, and at the time patented October 7th, 1941, and yet the paper didn't appear until 45.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the general...
When was the patent submitted?
Application April 27, 1940.
40, okay.
Well, wait a minute, that's methyl aryl silicone, that's not the one I want. I want the direct synthesis. Now, start over again. Composition of matter. Here we are. Number 2,380,995, preparation of organosilicon halides. Information relates to the preparation of organosilicon halides, and more particularly to the product of hydrocarbon production of hydrocarbon substituted silicon halides. And that's the basic patent on the direct synthesis application, September 26, 1941. So from May of 1940 to September 26, 1941, I was engaged in trying all sorts of experiments, see how extensive this general method was. Was it a general method?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We applied to the methyl silicon bromides and the silicon iodides to the ethyl compounds, the propyl, butyl, to phenol, to aromatic in general. And so I did experiment after experiment after experiment, lots of it. Here are 13 examples in the patent, and all the claims Hey, that was a great day when Walter Rule, R-U-L-E, came over to the lab and said, we got the final allowance on your application for the direct synthesis. And guess what claim we got as the number one claim, the most basic claim of all? Well, I don't know. He submitted all kinds of words and, you know, they disallow this claim and not allow the claim and so on. The claim that they allowed is the broadest possible thing you can imagine. The method of preparing organosilicon halides, which comprises effecting reaction between silicon and a hydrocarbon halide. Nothing about how or conditions or anything, and no limitation on the hydrocarbon halide or which halogen, anything, just effecting reaction.
Mm.
Well, great. So this is what the whole industry is based on. Hundreds of, well, we're now into the millions and millions, the dozens of millions of tons of methyl silicone made each year worldwide and made by this method, covered by that.
The patent litigation situation developed right after the war, was that 45, 46, somewhere in there? Or was it earlier? I'm not clear. I'm just trying to figure the time.
It was earlier because it involves the preparation of methyl silicone by the Grignard method.
Okay, all right.
So it began the results of the 1938 preparation. Once I had methyl silicone and showed that it was good insulating material, then of course patent application went in on this. And yeah, resinous materials and insulated conductors and other products utilizing the same. So that those all went back to my first file.
You mentioned in your book that the publication of the patent proceedings of the litigation is probably one of the best descriptions of early silicone chemistry there is.
Yes,
it's not something anybody reads, but it was pretty well spelled out there.
Yeah, and regarding what you're told by Earl Warwick and others, I had copies of the proceedings and the briefs submitted, everything concerned with those interferences. And by the way, on methyl silicones and related products, that was application August 1st, 1939. See,
that was
well before the direct synthesis. Yeah, it's very important, and I lost it. Don't ever get to be 85 years old. On the other hand, it's more fun than the alternative.
That's true.
I still get a lot of fun out of life and keep active on lots of things. Now, there's something about this. Oh, the organosilicon symposia are held once every 3 years. See, there was one at Madison organized by my former student Bob West. Now, there was some occasion some celebration at Dow Corning, and I was invited to participate at some anniversary, some celebration. Helen will remember. I have to go back to her. Anyway, I got there and I found that they had assigned a young man from the laboratory to help me, that is, to accompany me wherever I went. He was to make sure I didn't go to any of the wrong places or see any of the wrong people. He stuck with me everywhere we went. It reminded me of the first time we went into East Germany when they assigned someone to follow us in the street, everywhere. Anyway, he's a very nice young man, and we got along very well, and I asked him whether he had ever, and what he knew about the, well, he was full of this derivative business, and I asked him, had he read the proceedings or even just the briefs of the patent interferences? No, he didn't know there was such a thing. Well, don't you have a copy of these in your library? Well, he'd never heard of such a thing and didn't think there was a copy there. People write histories of the silicone industry and their all sorts of histories, and they never refer to the basic primary source. You have to look at the testimony of Eugene Sullivan and James Franklin Hyde and Art Barry and so on and so on, all in those patent interference cases. This is sworn testimony, and you'll find there what's what. There is no derivation, that no provable derivation at all. The statement that I was required to put in my first paper was purely a matter of courtesy between a GE, vice president of a GE director of the GE Research Laboratory in Schenectady and the director of the Corning Research Laboratory there. Personal communication between them. And that's the verifiable truth. You get hold of the interferences. Well, the interesting thing was that this young man had never heard of these. He didn't believe, he truly didn't believe that they existed. He said when he got there, he was told that the silicones were Corning, Dow Corning invention. All the developments came from there. Anything that General Electric did was based on what GE stole from Corning. That was the word he used, what GE stole from Corning and has used ever since. Now, he said every new chemist who is brought in is told that, they're indoctrinated with that. And this is an untruth, and not only a fallacy, it's just simply just an untruth what they tell those young people. So I would say if you're writing any kind of history, by all means go to the sources. Look, I had to leave the General Electric Company. I can tell you why and how if you want to know. But
that was where I was going to ask. You had a 3-year period between this time, this point, and when you left in 48, I believe. Is that correct? You left in 48?
Mm-hmm.
And I was curious as to what you did in those 3 years and then why you left.
Well, first place, I help to bring in and train a dozen young chemists to get into the silicone project, do lab work, development work mostly on it, but to do exploratory research on it, all different things. They were, to a man, organic chemists, didn't know anything at all about organometallic chemistry and had no idea what had gone on. First thing each one wanted to do individually was to try organosilicon compounds in every named organic reaction that's listed in the in organic textbook. Well, I had written monthly reports, that was required. And I had copies of all these monthly reports. I wrote summaries of the monthly reports, and so I was asked to put together a kind of silicone Bible. How did this all rise in GE organization? What's been done so far? And is there an index of every research project that's been carried out so far? Up to me to provide this. I had to write. People said, don't you find writing hard? Well, all chemists hate to take time away from the lab bench to do this, but I had to do it, and of course I wrote a little 60-page book, which got me in hot water too, because Marshall wouldn't approve it. Go to the John Wiley and Sons in New York. He sat on it. I asked about it. Week after week went by. A month went by. Finally, I cornered him in the office and said, what about my little book? It was requested by Wiley and Sons. They do all the GE electrical engineering textbook things for the incoming students. They are pressing me for it. Where is it? He opened the bottom desk drawer and said, I have it here. Well, he put the approval on it. It has to go in for publication. No, it isn't going in, he said. Why? I won't send it in until everybody else in the whole silicone project has a chance to write a book too.